You're with SBS Radio.
Wada Morley and welcome to NITV Radio. And it's that time of the week again where we get to check in and yarn all things science and technology with Ray Johnston, science and technology journalist. Welcome to the program this afternoon, Ray. Good to have you back.
Oh, thanks for having me, sis. Appreciate it.
Lovely to hear from you. Now, first up on the program today, we're going to be talking about a new app and guidelines to treat and prevent hearing loss in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. Do tell me more, Ray.
Yeah, so in remote communities across the country, only 1 in 10 Aboriginal children under the age of 3 years has healthy ears, which is a shocking statistic. You've got 5 in 10 have what's commonly known as glue ear. You've got 4 in 10 that have chronic middle ear infections. And 3 in 10 have a hearing impairment that actually makes them disabled. So this can affect communication, relationships, your quality of life from soon after birth all right through your toddler years, your school, and then even later, like employment opportunities. So improved ear and hearing health, they're really critical to closing the gap outcomes and targets, and even just so that people can have a better childhood and a better life. So there's been a new bunch of guidelines that have come out recommending annual and catch-up ear health checks for at-risk children, antibiotics being strongly recommended for kids with persistent middle ear infections that are coming back all the time, faster surgical referrals so that you don't have such a long waiting time, and they've also made a new app that's been developed. It gives fast access to all the guidelines, plus it's got images and animations, and it's in a whole bunch of languages as well, which is really good. And it's been designed to be used in the clinics, so it has videos and a quiz and cartoons to help explain hearing loss and how the ear works and how ear infections can be prevented, and really understanding what treatments are available. So that's really good. And I'm glad that some steps are being taken because this is a really huge problem that we have.
It does sound like a really huge problem in our community, and it does seem like this new app can be a positive thing to come, Ray. Now we go from talking about prevention of hearing loss in Indigenous communities to the ocean, and it turns out, I understand, that more people are actually scared of jellyfish rather than sharks. Tell me more, sis.
You wouldn't know it by listening to media reports or watching movies or TVs, but yeah, the fear that we apparently all have of meeting jaws on our next trip to the beach, it's more likely to be drowning and other animals like jellyfish and crabs and stingrays, and not an encounter with a shark that we're scared of when we take a dip. Sharks actually come in fourth behind those other things. And the results of this study are pretty surprising, given the media's portrayal of, shark and human interactions and how vilified sharks can be in popular culture as well. But it's actually promising to see that people's fears are more in line with the chance of these threats. You've got many more people drowning every year compared to being attacked by a shark. And these results are also good news for shark conservation because they show a bit of a shift in public perception, that people's idea of sharks is changing. And that's really critical to protecting them. We've got many species of sharks that are experiencing a decline in their population. And even though you've got many shark species at risk of extinction, mass media still tends to focus on the threats of sharks to humans rather than from humans to sharks. It's really the other way around. So it's good to hear not as many people as we thought are really that scared of sharks, and hopefully we can turn things around for them in the future.
Sounds good, sis. Now you need to tell us something more about satellite images taken over 3 decades that actually show that keeping dingoes out of the ecosystem comes at a price to us.
Yeah. So the environmental impacts of removing dingoes from the landscape, it's actually visible from space. And this has come from a new University of New South Wales, Sydney study. And it shows 32 years worth of satellite imagery and also combines it with a bit of field research out on the ground on both sides of the dingo fence. Now, the dingo fence is this big long fence. It's 5,600 kilometres long and it goes across parts of Queensland and New South Wales and South Australia. And it was put up in the 1880s to keep dingoes away from livestock. And what these researchers have found is that the vegetation inside the fence, that's the areas without the dingoes, they have poorer long-term growth than the vegetation in the areas with dingoes.
Mm.
So the dingoes are indirectly affecting all of the trees and shrubs and plants and flowers by controlling the numbers of kangaroos and other small mammals. When the dingoes are removed, the kangaroo numbers increase, which then leads to overgrazing, and it has flow-on effects to the entire ecosystem. So yet another reason why we need to be reintroducing our natural apex predator to maintain our biodiversity on this continent and to help balance things out a bit better.
That's so interesting that they did this research over many decades too, Sis.
Yeah, and the fact that they could use the satellite technology as well, you know, this is just one example of how that can be used. And you know, we've got 3 decades worth of all of this information and all of this data. So I can only think of what else we're going to learn in the future about our country.
Now tell me, what are we going to learn about native bees coming up next? I understand one particular species has been found after 100 years. Is this right, Sis?
Yeah, I know you love a bee story. You can't go past a bee story, can you, Sis?
I can't.
So there's been this widespread search for a very rare native bee that hadn't been recorded for almost a century, and it's been found. It's been there all along, but it's probably under increasing pressure to survive, and there's not very many of them. So 100 years ago, only 6 individuals, that's just 6 little bees, it's called the Pharohylius, were ever found, with the last published record of it from 1923 in Queensland. And now recently, 3 whole populations of them have been found by sampling bees visiting, you know, different plant species along the Australian east coast. But the problem that we have is that Australia has already cleared more than 40% of its forests and woodlands since invasion. And it means that the remainder of those sites are, you know, in little pockets and they're fragmented and they're not what they used to be. So this species of bee is incredibly vulnerable, especially since it really likes, you know, floral plants only found near tropical or subtropical rainforest, which is just one vegetation type. It's only found in one kind of area. So hopefully we can protect these environments and we can see more of the Pharohylius bees in the future.
Gotta love a good bee story. It's been an absolute pleasure talking all things science and technology again with you today, Ray Johnston, our science and technology journalist right here on NITV Radio. Thanks so much, Ray.
Oh, thanks for having me. Anytime.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.